If you have your Bibles, turn with me to the book of Exodus. We're continuing on in our series. We're going to look at chapters 12 through 14. Not going to go through all of it, but see. We're going to go through specific portions. You know, we've been talking about this a journey that God brings the people through. So for the first three parts, we focus specifically on the journey that Moses himself has gone through, where he went from being a prince of Egypt to now a prophet of God, and this journey of faith that he has gone through. And now we're going to make that transition into not just focusing in on the life of Moses, but really the people of God, because ultimately that's the story. It's the people of God going through this journey, right? And so this journey through the wilderness, I think it's, I was thinking about this, I think it's relevant for us in many ways, even though we might not necessarily know exactly what the Israelites have gone through, but I think we can relate to many of the things that they experience on this journey, right? Because I don't know about you, but many times I see my life as a journey that I am on. Sometimes I know the end destination, other times I have no idea where I'm going. Sometimes it's easy, other times it's tough. But along the way, what the people of Israel begin to discover, first of all, is that their journey is really a story about God. It's not necessarily about the people, but it's really about the God who leads them through this journey and really his intimate involvement in every aspect of their lives. And not only is it a story about God, but it's really about his heart, a story of his heart as well, that desires to bring his people out from slavery into freedom. Right? This is what the journey represented, that in Egypt they were held in slavery. And that's what God wanted to rescue the people from. And we talked about this before, how I feel like that's relevant to many of us. Because we know and we have experienced what it feels like to be under slavery to something, where it keeps us ultimately from really being able to experience worship of who God is. And lastly, it's a story about the journey that God's people undertakes to rediscover who God is. Because when God comes to Moses, and when God comes to the Israelites, I mean, they are able to experience his power, and that's what you guys were able to talk about last time with Pastor Tufu when he was talking about the different plagues and so forth. Really, they were able to experience power, but it's been such a long time since the people of God were actually able to worship God. And so it's going to be this journey of rediscovering who God is. And so I feel like not only is it true for the people of Israel, but it's true for me and it's true for you as well. Because it is a journey about finding out that God is intimately involved in every aspect of our lives. It's a journey about God who desires to bring freedom into our lives. And it's about a journey of discovering more deeply of who he is and what he desires. And so he is on the cusp of bringing the people out. And that's where we are in chapter 12. So let's look specifically at chapter 12, verses 33 through 42. And this is going to set up the stage for us for this afternoon. Okay? All right, Exodus 12, verses 33 through 42. Okay? Exodus 12, 33 through 42. All right, here we go. It says, "The Egyptians were urgent with the people to send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we shall all be dead. So the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading bowls being bound up with their cloaks on their shoulders. The people of Israel had also done as Moses told them, for they had asked the Egyptians for silver and gold, jewelry and fine clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians so that they let them have what they asked. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. And the people of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. A mixed multitude also went up with them, and very much livestock, both flocks and herds. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough that they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared any provisions for themselves. The time that the people of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of 430 years, on that very day, all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt, It was a night of watching by the Lord to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So the same night is a night of watching kept to the Lord by all the people of Israel throughout their generations, right? So we're at this point in the story where the people of God are finally able to experience freedom, and they're on this cusp of transitioning now from Egypt into the wilderness. And as God leads his people from Egypt into wilderness, there's two reminders that I want to give to all of us, two things that we see, and hopefully that will encourage us in our journey as well, right? So the first thing that we see in the story, first reminder is simply this, that God provides a way, right? That God provides a way. That when you think about the story, it's really about God breaking through into the lives of people. And the thing that we see over and over again is God providing for their specific needs. There's three specific ways in chapters from 12 through 14 in which God provides for the people, right? So first of all, we see in Exodus 12, 5 through 13 that God provides by covering over his people. God provides by covering over his people, right? So we're at this stage or this point in the story where there's this final plague that's going to come. And the final plague that God is going to unleash upon the land of Egypt is what? The firstborn. So whether it's a human firstborn or whether it's an animal firstborn, that the firstborn is going to be slaughtered. But God makes a way so that the people of God will not experience his judgment and that God is going to pass over them. And that's what we see. Let's read this together in chapter 12, starting from verse 5. He says, "Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goat, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly, all the congregations of Israel, shall kill their lambs at twilight. Then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the house in which they eat it." And then it talks about roasting it and so forth. And then we jump all the way to verse 12. It says, "For I will pass through the land of Egypt at night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the house where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt." So what God declares is that he's going to bring about this judgment. And so that's what God has been doing. It's not this arduous process of, you know what, I'm going to free the people, and just for the heck of it, I'm going to bring about all these plagues. Because God didn't necessarily need to do that. And so you think about, okay, why is it that God went through this process of freeing his people? And ultimately what God was doing, not only for the Egyptians, but even for the surrounding nations, was that he was bringing about judgment. And that's what we talked about last Sunday for those of us who are here. That not only is a God, God of love, God of mercy, but he's also a God of justice, God of holiness, God of righteousness. And it's really interesting because he's not only saying that I'm going to bring about judgment to the people, but ultimately to these false gods. And so the specific plagues that he's been unleashing upon the land of Israel, you know, it's not just some random, you know what, I feel like frogs or gnats. But each of these plagues, actually what he's doing is he's attacking these false gods that the Egyptians are worshiping. And this last final act of judgment, God says, not only am I going to bring about judgment upon the people, but ultimately judgment upon the false gods. Because I think the issue here really is, it's about worship. You know, when I think about the book of Exodus, it's really about God leading his people from slavery into freedom. But when you think about that process of freedom, and I might just be jumbling up my notes, but I don't care. I'm going to go into this, all right? When you think about this process of freedom, the question is, what is God bringing them out of and into what? And I think the story is really about people who are called to worship. And he begins to systematically destroy and tear down everything that gets in the way of God receiving worship and glory. And one of the things that he does is demonstrate that these gods that these Egyptians are worshiping are no real gods at all. That there is only one true living God. Because now you have to think about this from the perspective of who? The Israelites. Because obviously the Egyptians were the people who are over them in terms of having power and so forth. And so not only the Egyptians, but the gods that these Egyptians worshipped, they represented that power to the Israelites. But what God is saying is that ultimately I'm going to bring you out under the enslavement of these false gods so that you are able to engage in worship of this true God. And when you think about the journey that God brings us through, in many ways, this is what God does in our lives as well, right? When God challenges you to surrender certain things from your lives, He doesn't do that to make your lives miserable. Like when Pastor Ben goes off on his horse and he says, surrender your future and your family. And, you know, it's not like, oh, there he goes again. It's the mantra of HMCC of Austin, right? Surrender your future, your family. And you're like, yeah, you're rolling your eyes. No, it's not for the sake of saying these things so that he can say them. I mean, he doesn't have to say them. He can just pluck them right out from your life. But what he is addressing is issue of what? False gods and idolatry. And so what he begins to do is systematically tear down those things from our lives so that we can actually engage in worship of the true God. And sometimes it's hard for us to see that because sometimes the good things, they become the ultimate things. And so even on this journey that God is going to bring them through, and I'm jumping the gun a little bit, that he begins to demonstrate that even these good things, that they're not the ultimate thing, that there is only one ultimate thing in our lives. There is only one ultimate thing in the lives of the Israelites, and that is God. And so he's going to do everything in his power to bring us from the influences of darkness into light, which is God himself. And so he says, I'm going to bring about this judgment. And the thing that we notice here is that the people of Israel, they're not exempt from this judgment, right? God doesn't say, you know what, Egyptians, bad. Israelites, two thumbs up, you're really good. No, he says, I'm going to unleash my judgment. But you know what? I'm going to provide a way for you. I'm going to cover over you so that when my judgment goes forth, that there's going to be something else that's going to pay the price that you should have paid. And when we read this passage, our radar should immediately go up, right? As Christians, ding, it should be like, dee, 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 dee. Oh, this sounds familiar. Lamb, sacrifice, blood. We don't have to pay the price. I mean, ultimately, it's pointing to Jesus as our ultimate Passover. And so it's not that the people of Israel are exempt. It's not that they have a free pass. But what he is saying is that I'm going to cover over you. And the price that you should have paid, the judgment that you should have received alongside of the Egyptians, that when I see the blood that is posted on your doorframes, that I'm going to know that that price has already been paid by this lamb that has no blemish. And so God covers over his people. And not only does God cover over his people, but as we see as the story continues, that God leads his people. That God leads his people. Let's read Exodus 13. So they're finally out, right? They experience this tragedy in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh and all his people are telling the people of God to go out. And so they are finally coming out. And as they are coming out, this is what happens. Chapter 13, verses 21 through 22. It says, and the Lord went before them. And I think that's really significant. God goes before them. You know, when you think about how God walks with you, he's not a God who says, you know what, I'm going to come behind you.
But he's a God who says, I'm going to go before you to guide you, to pave the way for you. And so he goes before the people to lead them through this journey. And he does that by what? I think all of us know this, by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and night. The pillar of cloud by day and pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. And early on, what God is doing is he's setting this pattern. And so I think one thing that we really need to get, especially from the early chapters of the book of Exodus, is that God is setting a pattern for his people. And so one of the patterns that he sets is this identity of who they are. So not only are they a people whom God frees so that they can go to worship this living God, that they are his chosen people, but in this process of leading, that he's the one who's going to lead and the people of God are the one who's going to follow. And so he is establishing this identity as the people of God who are to follow. They're called to follow, right? And so ultimately what he wants to do is he wants to teach his people that he is indeed trustworthy. That he is trustworthy. That he's going to take them exactly where they need to go. And the thing that God challenges over and over again, and we will see this in later chapters, and the thing that he roots out so that the people of God can become or be at that place where they can really trust God is what? He begins to root out their personal agendas. And we see the people of God struggling over and over again. And the reason why they're not able to trust in God is because of their personal agendas, because of the things that they want to see happen. But God establishes this pattern in this relationship where God says, I'm the one who's going to lead and you're the one who's going to follow. And so he provides for his people by leading them through this journey. And that's what God does in our lives as well, that he sets this pattern for us where he's going to come and lead and he calls us to follow. That's what the pattern that we see even in the life of Jesus when he calls us to be his disciples. He says that as I go before you, that I want you to follow in this pattern that I set. And so we see God leading his people, but not only that, but the last thing that we see in this chunk of the story of God leading the people from Egypt out into the promised land is that ultimately God protects his people. That God protects his people, right? So we come to chapter 14 where they're about to cross over into the promised land, but Pharaoh is thinking, man, he's second-guessing his decision, so he sends his army, right? And then as soon as the Israelites see the army of Pharaoh coming, they're freaking out, complaining to Moses, see, we told you we should never be in this place. You should have never brought us out. So Moses cries out to God. And this is what we see in chapter 14, verse 13. And Moses said to the people, fear not, stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you and you have only to be silent. The Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. Man, I don't know about you, that verse 14, it really resonates deeply in my heart when Moses says, the Lord will fight for you and you have only to be silent. You know, because it's like this moment where, I can't think of a specific movie, right? But you watch movies where the hero or the, what do you call a female hero? Heroine? Okay. I wanted to make sure it wasn't. All right. Right, they're freed from the
the clutches of the evil, whatever, XYZ. And at that moment of finally experiencing freedom, at the last minute, you see this hand coming up and grabbing this person, trying to drag them down, right? And at that point, if you're a little bit jumpy, you're like, oh! And then you watch, and the person is like trying to kick, and you don't know if they're actually going to be dragged down or if they're going to experience freedom. I mean, that's the point of the story. That the people of God are finally at this stage where they're about to experience freedom, and then guess what? Here comes Egypt all over again, trying to enslave them once again. You know, when you think about the journey that we go through, especially for us who struggle with really experiencing freedom in God, through the various issues of life, right? Whether it's an addiction, maybe it's an issue of trust, whatever it is, it's as we feel like we're experiencing freedom, what happens? That thing that we're struggling with, we see that the grasp of that thing slowly coming and trying to entrap us to tank once again. And this is where we have to know that on this journey to freedom, that no matter how you think that you can struggle and overcome, that you can't. And the reason why the Israelites turned to Moses and they were freaking out is because they knew that they were no match for the armies of Egypt. And that's why when Moses says, "The Lord will fight for you and you have only to be silent," that it's God who's going to continue to rescue you. It's God who's going to continue to work. It's God who's going to continue to demonstrate His power in your life. And I hope that these words bring hope into some of our hearts. Maybe there is a question that you've struggled with such a long time, something that you've been aiming for, and you're thinking, God, when is this going to happen? Or maybe there's a sin that you've been struggling with, and you're thinking, how in the world am I going to overcome? And the question is, you can't overcome. You're not going to have the answers. But we have something better. And that better is God who fights. Because we are not able to fight. And I love what Moses says. He says, "You have only to be silent." And maybe it's because people are like, Moses, bye-bye. He's saying, just shut your mouth, all right? I thought about something funny. All right, I'll tell you. So when we were at my brother-in-law's, right, they have a little dog. And really sweet dog. But so I was trying to use, I don't know if you guys ever seen like Dog Whisper. Like when he goes, right? Whenever like the dog jumps on you and stuff. So I was doing this, and then I didn't realize Nathaniel was right there. But so after I stopped, then he started going, except the way that he was saying it. So my wife and I, we had a laugh, and then after that we repented, and we told him not to do it anymore. So. All right, so coming back, the Lord will fight for you. All right, let's move on. That it's going to be God who will protect you. So what am I trying to say? What do we see in this pattern, right? God covering over His people, God leading His people, God protecting His people. You know, ultimately, the pattern that we see is that it's God who makes the way for the people of God. It's God Himself who makes the way. It's almost as if God is saying He's the one who drew you to Himself and He's the one who's going to continue to sustain you so that ultimately you can find your way back to Him.
And you know, that's one of the most frustrating things about the story of the Israelites wandering through the wilderness. Because even as they experience the faithfulness of God over and over again, it's the story of how God had to bring them back to himself over and over again. But that's how it is in many of our lives as well, right? Because we experience the blessings and the faithfulness of God, but then what happens? That we place ourselves in situations, we go in a direction where God has to bring us back to himself over and over again. And I don't think God necessarily is saying this with like this malicious intent or as a God who's very angry and frustrated. But I think the lesson that God was trying to teach the Israelites from the beginning of this journey was that he was going to be the anchor. That he was going to be the one who was going to provide for all of their needs. That he was going to make the way from this journey of being enslaved in Egypt to experiencing the miraculous powers of God and now about to enter into the wilderness, looking forward to this promised land. That God was going to make the way. And I know that we all know this. But the reality is that when something happens to us, right? So when we go through transitions or when we're wrestling through with questions or certain things happen or when we go from one stage of life to the next stage, the first question that arises for many of us and the question that many of us struggle with over and over again is what? The question of, is God going to provide? Is God going to come through for me again? Is God going to be faithful to me again? I know that God has been faithful in the past, but can God do it one more time? And what we see here is that we're never going to get to that place where we're not going to struggle. I think that's just part of what it means to be people who are imperfect, who are limited in our understanding of who God is. But what God does is he begins to set this pattern so that when we are faced with struggles, that when we are at that point where we're making transitions and we're thinking, can God come through for me again? What he does is he sets this pattern in our lives to demonstrate yes, 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 yes. And one thing I think that's really powerful about the story is that not only does God come through for the people of Israel during those like oppressive moments, because when you think about people being in bondage in Egypt, I mean, that's like the lowest struggles of our lives, right? But God also comes through for them in the everyday things of life. Providing for them food and water and directing and guiding them every single day. And so that's what he does, this pattern of daily providing for us. This pattern of daily reminding us of who he is. That pattern of daily providing brothers and sisters in Christ. So that through this fellowship with one another, that we can once again be reminded of the goodness of who God is. And that's why when you think about what God does, not only does he patiently endure the struggles of the people, but he reminds them along the way, not only in terms of what he has done, but ultimately who he is. And that's why in Exodus 12, early on, we read this, right? You guys don't have to turn to it. I'll just read for us. Exodus 12, verses 24 through 27. This is what God says. He says, "You shall observe this rite as a statute for you and your sons forever. And when you come to the land that the Lord will give you, as he has promised, you shall say this. You shall, excuse me, keep the service. And when your children say to you, what does this what do you mean by this service? You shall say, it is a sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. For he passed over the houses of the people of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians, but spared our houses. And the people bowed their heads and worshiped. And we see this pattern over and over again. That God says to do this or establish this, not as a ritual, but as a reminder of who God is. And that's why God institutes the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. And actually the Jewish people, they observe it to this day. So God reminds us, God places patterns in our lives. So just think about that. What pattern is God establishing in your life? As you've been able to experience the faithfulness of God over and over and over again, what are the patterns that God is creating for you? So that whether it's struggling right now or maybe the future struggles that will come, that's going to be the pattern that God is going to point to. And that he will remind you of, not just in terms of what he has done, but who he is. I want to show us this video. I think many of you might have seen it already. I was toying with the idea of whether to show this or not, but I'm just going to go ahead and show it. This is the video that they played for Pastor Seth and Christina, just to honor them as they make that transition from Ann Arbor now to Hong Kong. And it's actually, when I saw this video, I got really nostalgic because it covers the whole range from when our church first got started in that fall of 96 to where it is now. And so what I want us to do is, when we see this video, not just see it in terms of, well, that's the way in which God has been able to use Pastor Seth and Christina and so forth, but really think about the faithfulness of God, because not only is this a story for these two individuals, but it's really the story of our church. Because it's not just about the team that's going to Hong Kong, but it's really about the future that God is bringing our church to. And so when you watch the video, and some of you, if you've seen this video, then be blessed again. But when you watch this video, really see this video through the eyes of the faithfulness of God that he establishes, not only over the lives of Pastor Seth and Christina, but over our church, okay? And so let's watch that. I just want to warn you a little bit, or not warn. In the beginning, they interview Pastor Seth's parents, and they speak in Korean, okay? But they have the translation in English, so all you have to do is just read the bottom, okay? So let's go ahead and watch this video together. The reason why I wanted to show this video is because, I mean, this is really our heritage. The faithfulness of God that he has established over and over again. And it's not just about the two individuals, or it's not just about this team. But it's really about God who has come through for us over and over and over again. And so that's the testimony that God has written in our church, and that's the testimony that God will continue to write in our lives. And that God will always provide a way, that he will always be faithful. You know, that's the testimony that our church was founded on. And that's the testimony that God is going to continue to lead you to. And that's the testimony that God will continue to etch into our lives. And so let me close with this. Not only God providing a way, but ultimately we see that God is the end destination. That ultimately that God is the end destination, right? So when you think about what God is doing, right? Bringing the people from Israel out of Egypt into this promised land where they were in slavery, promised land representing freedom and so forth. The question is, I mean, what is God really doing? Because on one hand, we understand the people of God, oppression, slavery, I'm sure it really stunk to be there. God's compassionate heart of wanting to bring them. But when we think about the promised land, it's not as if the promised land was going to be perfect. Because we know that we live in a fallen world. Even if they might not necessarily have experienced to the degree of hardship and difficulties that they experienced in Egypt, we still know that when they entered into the promised land, there's still going to be suffering, there's still going to be sadness, there's still going to be struggles. And so the question is, what is God doing? Because I think when we read this story and when we think about this journey, the answer necessarily isn't the promised land itself. The ultimate goal is not necessarily you go into the promised land and everything's going to be hunky-dory. I mean, that's how we kind of envision our Christian walk, right? There's a starting point, and when we come to know Christ, or there's a starting point where God places certain convictions in us, and when we get to that end point, so whatever that end point looks like for you, that end point of when you get that job, that end point of when you meet that someone, that end point of when you finally get to that place, that everything's going to work out, but we know that it's not going to work out. How do we know this? It's because we've experienced this before. Some of you worked really hard, maybe others of you not as hard, but you were aiming for University of Texas. That was the end point. Maybe some of you, that wasn't the end point. That wasn't the, God bless you, you're here. And we believe in the sovereignty of God.
Right.
But that was the end point. And so when you got here, what happened? You begin to realize, you know what, my life is what? Just beginning. So I don't think the promised land is necessarily the end point. When you think about this journey that God is bringing them through. So if that's not the end point, then what is God doing? And when you really think about what God is doing, is that ultimately God is bringing the people not to where, but to whom. That God is bringing the people to himself. Because it's really a journey of not necessarily entering into the promised land, but it's a journey of discovering who God is. Because the promised land, it's not land. I mean, it might be fertile land, but it still has, you know, bugs. You still have to till the land. It's not perfect. But what the promised land represents is the goodness of who God is. The blessings of God that is poured out over his people. And so when you think about that calling, when you think about that conviction or that dream that God places in you, that's not the end point. That's not the end point. But what that represents is the goodness of God that is at work in your life. And the end destination is not the place, it's not the dream, it's not that family, but it's God himself. And this journey is about God bringing you closer to himself. And that's what he shows the people over and over again. And that's why when we think about the wilderness, oftentimes we think about the wilderness as it's just something that we have to bear through it. It's kind of like carrying the cross. It's something we just have to do. We have to grit our teeth. We have to bear through it. But it's actually in the wilderness that they begin to discover the reality of who God is. And when you think about what the wilderness represents, the wilderness really represents the grace of God. The reason why I say this is because wilderness is a place where God will sometimes gently, other times forcefully remove the things from your life. All the hindrances so that you can't look to yourself, you can't look to your dreams, you can't look to your, rely on your talents. The only person that you can rely on is God and God alone. Because what's out there in the wilderness? Nothing. That's why it's called the wilderness, right? There's nothing there. And it's only in that place where there is absolutely nothing that God demonstrates to his people that it doesn't matter whether there is nothing or anything because God becomes everything in their lives. And I know that some of the journey that you are on, at times it's painful. But the reason why it's painful is because we hold on to things that ultimately doesn't mean anything. And what God is trying to do from our lives is to rip those things from us so that he can become everything. Because this journey that God has brought us through, It's not a journey of destination. It's not a journey of our dreams and hopes, but it's a journey of knowing God more and more and more. And really experiencing the faithfulness of God, that He becomes our final destination. You know, I remember when I was in Michigan, I would just get in my car and I would just go for random drives. I wouldn't have a destination in mind, but I would just go for random drives and I would just love it. And sometimes I would do this in the middle of the night. The best feeling is when it's so cold outside, and for the Texan, y'all don't know this, right? You don't know what this feels like, but when it's so cold, and I don't know why I used to do this, but when it's so cold outside, I used to roll down all my windows, and I used to turn my heat up at the highest setting and just blast it. And it's like this weird mixture of like cold, yet you're hot, and it's exhilarating. And sometimes when it's snowing, right, and you're going really fast, you turn on your high beams, and it looks like you're in the middle of like a Star Wars scene. Like all these snow, and it's the best feeling. And I used to do that, and that's how I used to meet with God. I know that's how I get in my car and drive, but that's how I used to meet God. I spend hours praying and just interacting with Him. And this actually carried into when Susan and I got engaged. I mean, not the rolling of the windows. And then she would have thought, this guy is weird and I'm going to bail. But, you know, like we used to just go for random drives and we wouldn't necessarily have a destination in mind. Because it wasn't about the destination. It wasn't about, oh, let's go here or let's go there. But it was about the time we were able to spend with one another in the car. That time was so precious to us because that time was the only time that we had during the week to reconnect. Because I was in Chicago during the week, and then when I came back, you know, I was so busy doing ministry. But that was the time where we were able to reconnect. That was a time that we were able to get deeper and build that relationship. And I think that's how God sees this journey through the wilderness. Many times we think of it as, you know what, there's a pain in the butt, I just got to get through it. Yes, I know that Jesus, He's making me more like Him, but it stinks, so Jesus, hurry up. But Jesus says it's not about the hurry up, but it's about me connecting with your heart. It's about me spending that time with you. It's about me getting to know you and you getting to know me. It's about me helping you to realize that I am the end destination. That God makes the way. And not only does God make the way, but ultimately He becomes the destination for His people. So the one thing that I want to close out with is simply this. Turn your journey into a journey of pursuing after Christ. Whatever journey that you are on in life, as a student, as a single working adult, as a married couple, with kids, without kids, whether you're aiming for corporate America, whether you're aiming for the ministry, whether you're aiming for family, whether you're aiming for Austin, Dallas, Houston, whether you're aiming for Jakarta, no matter what it is that you are aiming for, turn your journey that you are on into a journey of pursuing after Christ. Because that's the journey that He's on with you. He's not so much interested in getting you to that destination. Because when you get to that destination, I mean, let's be honest, right? What are you going to do for Him that He can't do Himself? What can we really add to who Jesus is? Being perfect, not needing anything or anyone, and yet being completely satisfied within Himself. But the awesome thing is He wants to get to know us. That He wants us to discover the delight of being in this journey with Him.
That's where the delight happens. That's where the joy comes. And sometimes we are joyless in our walk with Him because we miss out on the fact that it's not about the destination, but it's about Jesus Himself. You know, when I think about the people that are filled with the most joy in their lives, they're not the people who have everything put together. They're not the people who have all the answers in the world. They're not the people that everything is somehow going well for them. It's people who have real life struggles and issues, and they wrestle with God. But it's people who also know that it doesn't matter where they're going, it doesn't matter what they're experiencing, as long as they're headed towards Jesus. And so I don't know if this is going to be a weird question to end today's talk together, but maybe the question is, where are you headed? Are you headed towards Jesus? Or are you headed towards what you feel like is the promised land? But when you get there, you're only going to be sorely disappointed. But God wants our hearts. Let's stand together as we close out our time. I want to thank you guys for listening and I want us to think about what pattern is God writing into your life. Some of you who might be struggling with God's faithfulness. And you know the thing with our struggles is that just because you have experienced the faithfulness of God in the past doesn't guarantee that you're not going to struggle in the present with that same question that you have. And just because you are able to overcome your struggle today doesn't mean that you're not going to struggle in the future. There is no guarantees. Accept the faithfulness of God and the pattern that He will continue to establish over your life. That if He has come through for you in the past, that He will come through again. That if He has demonstrated His love for you in the past, that He will demonstrate His love for you again. That if He has answered your questions about His goodness and faithfulness and His provisions in the past, then He will do that again and again and again and again. Because what He is interested is you. What God was interested in the lives of His people was not to somehow get them to the promised land so that they can do whatever they want to do and then that He won't be responsible for them any longer. No, what God was interested in was this journey. It was the people. That was what He was pursuing after. And I want to tell all of you that that is what God is pursuing after today here in this place. That He's pursuing after you. Father, we come before You. We pray that You will continue to, God, speak Your faithfulness into our lives. that you remind us, God, through the story of Moses and the Israelites, of your provisions for your people, this pattern of faithfulness that you establish over and over again. But God, not only the people of Israel and Moses, but even through the history of our church, God, that you have demonstrated your faithfulness over and over and over again. That you have demonstrated your grace and your mercy over and over and over again. That you have demonstrated the freedom that you have declared over the lives of your people over and over and over again, God. That you have demonstrated the power of transformation that your people were able to experience. And I pray, Lord, that you will continue to establish this pattern over our lives. I just pray for our hearts, God, that you will strengthen and encourage us. Encourage us to do this. Normally, you know, we have a time where we kind of pray for ourselves and so forth, but I think in light of this journey, and when you think about this context of not just one individual, but the people of God journeying together, I think that's the beautiful thing about this journey that God brings us through, that it's not just about us, but it's about the people of God that surrounds us, that encourages us, that becomes the example for us. And so can I encourage us to do this as we close out? Can you just turn to that one person that's sitting next to you?